Black Project Gaming, Mayday Roleplay, and The Green Box proudly present Psychotic Operas, collected fictions inspired by Delta Green, the role-playing game. Tonight we bring you tales of operations gone wrong, agents gone mad, and forbidden knowledge better left forgotten. These stories contain elements of suspense, horror, extreme violence, and other mature content. Listener discretion is advised. In the fall of 2020, the Night at the Opera Delta Green role-playing community hosted a contest for microfiction. The contest solicited submissions of microfiction, short works of writing that took place in the Delta Green universe and took less than 10 minutes to consume. The rules were simple. Entry was open to everyone over the age of 18. There were no limits on how many entries could be submitted, and there was no limit on not safe for work content. Submissions closed on October 31st, and the Night at the Opera community spent the next 2 weeks voting for their favorite entry and the content most able to be used in a Delta Green game. Winners were announced on November 16th, and among the entries were a number of incredible short stories. In an attempt to promote more Delta Green fan content, a joint effort by Black Project Gaming, Mayday Roleplay, and The Green Box, with the explicit permission of the authors, was undertaken to record these stories. Thus, Psychotic Operas were reborn. You can hear the complete collection of 2020's fictions in special episodes hosted by each podcast. For more information on Black Project Gaming, please visit blackprojectgaming.com. All of Mayday Roleplay's work can be found at maydayroleplay.com. Green Box content can be found at greenboxpod.com. You can also join the Night at the Opera community at r/Night at the Opera on Reddit. Now, let's begin.
The Desperate Account of a Montana Sheriff by Sea Turtles. It was a cold autumn afternoon when I got the call. I was sitting in my truck off 212 near the airfield. I like to watch the planes come in and take off. God knows there's fuck all else to do in Red Lodge when you've been here as long as I have. My radio buzzed to life.
Wake up. We got a call. Can you go check on Ryan? He did show up at work and nobody can get a hold of him.
Her voice roused me from my bored stupor. Sarah's a nice enough woman. We've grown closer over the years. She doesn't get on my nerves like most everybody else, which is good, considering I spend every working day listening to her. And we're sure he's not just on another bender. Wouldn't be the first time.
What? Do you have something better to do? You're the sheriff, Paul. Just do your job.
She had a point. I sipped my coffee and begrudgingly started the truck. Ryan lived out in the boonies near Minocqua. About a 20-minute drive on the highway. That drive was the last moment of peaceful ignorance I had in this life. I passed by a few cars with a wave here and there, but mostly just trees. And then the trees opened into prairies, through town after town, each with fewer buildings than I have fingers. Minocqua was close. I pulled off onto a gravel road about a mile before the sorry excuse for a town, and drove through the prairie road to the tree line. Can't help but think it would make good hunting land. Eventually, I arrived at a red metal cattle gate affixed to old timbers. A rusty barbed wire fence outlines the small acreage that Ryan inherited. I continued up the drive after briefly climbing out of the truck to open the gate. The neglected cabin came into view shortly after, sitting right next to a decaying white propane tank. Shingles have flaked off like scabs, and a front window is boarded up. No doubt the money was spent on booze rather than a replacement. When I was driving up, I don't know why I didn't notice the silence. Maybe I was frustrated. Or distracted. There was no barking dog like usual. No wind through the trees, only my radio. I laid onto the truck's horn and stepped out into the chill. Ryan, I am not your alarm clock, and I sure as hell ain't your babysitter. I yelled up at the house. His truck was there, but nobody answered. I reached inside my truck to the radio. Hey, Sarah, I just pulled up to Ryan's. I'm gonna run inside real quick.
All right, super cop, don't take too long.
When I was putting my radio back, something in the cabin caught my eye. Movement? My suspicions were confirmed by a gently waving curtain. I grabbed my shotgun off the rack in the truck and slung it over my shoulder, hoping to God I wouldn't need it. My feet left the gravel drive and climbed the wooden steps to the door. The patio creaked and flexed under my weight. I pulled the outer screen door open and wrapped my knuckles against the wood. It opened inwards, not even latched shut. With slight hesitation, I stepped inside and called out one last time. Ryan, come on, man. What's going on? Each step inside the cabin creaked on the old wooden floor. It was dark inside. The curtains and boarded window made it look difficult to see much, but I could see the glow of the television coming from further in. I gently let the screen close behind me and tightened my grip around the shotgun sling. I made my way into the living room where a tattered frame couch was waiting for me, but no Ryan. The room was expectedly in disarray. The floor was decorated with empty bottles of all kinds of liquor, each with the dribbles of the poison pooled in the bottom. An ashtray overflowing with partially burnt cigarettes and ash. The television was muted, but the screen had some reality show on. Storage Wars, I think. I didn't touch a thing. I moved past the couch and into the dining room. The table was even more of a mess, but a few things stood out. A crinkled Ziploc bag of what appeared to be mushrooms of a sort. I'll pretend I didn't see them. There was one thing I couldn't ignore, though. A book. God knows what language it was in. But inside the cover was the only note written with an English alphabet. Ut kohoin na adam. What the fuck? Couldn't help but mutter under my breath. My thoughts were quickly interrupted by the sounds of the television, abruptly coming alive with sound. I dropped the book on the table and spun on my heels. My shotgun found its way into my hands. I was breathing heavily now, admittedly frightened. Rolling my feet from heel to toe, I walked, floated as silently as I could, stepping over bottles and other garbage. I muted the TV and dropped the remote back on the couch. And now something else caught my attention, the faint trickling of water. I nervously trekked through the house towards the bathroom, noticing photographs and frames knocked from the wall. And then I felt a firm squish under my step. The tightness formed in my throat and I looked down. I was relieved for a brief moment before the disturbing realization set in. My boot was sitting in a shallow, sticky pool of blood speckled with pale worms. Maggots. Dozens of them. And it then became clear where that distinct squishy was coming from. My eyes followed the ground. The blood and worms trailed into the bathroom. I could still hear the trickling of a running faucet. I mustered my courage and turned the corner into the doorway of the bathroom. I staggered a bit and held down the bile trying to escape my throat. The wall and floor were smeared and streaked with blood. The mirror was cracked. I could see flecks of blood decorating the sink and the bathtub. The floor was writhing with those cursed worms. Against my better judgment, I took a careful step into the bathroom, trying to avoid stepping in the blood the best that I could. I felt the same sickening squelch of the worms under my feet. I was able to turn the faucet off, once again plunging the cabin into silence. I probably should have left at this point. But at this point, my morbid curiosity had completely taken over. My eye caught something sitting in the blood-speckled tub. My boot found a clean spot on the floor, and I leaned over to look into the tub. Well, I found the dog, or what was left of it. Jesus Christ! I was able to get out the words before my stomach emptied itself onto the bathroom floor. The tub was filled with gore in the vague shape of a Rottweiler, draped in a squirming blanket of maggots. The only indication of what it once was, the shine of a chain that acted as a collar. I stood there in shock, trying to put together the pieces of what went on here. In a kind of stupor, I wandered back into the dining room. My mind was racing, but my body was on autopilot. I sank into a chair and stared at the table. My eyes kept getting drawn to the book, over and over. Ut Korhoin Naadam. I set the shotgun down on the table and pulled out my phone. I started taking pictures of the book, but quickly found myself searching up the strange words. After a moment, I found a translation. Festival of the Worm. Mongolian. Mongolian? To say that I was confused was an understatement. What the fuck was Ryan doing with an old Mongolian book? I flipped through the book and saw many more notes scribbled in English. I dare not read into any of them. There were illustrations too, but they were both too grotesque and obscure. I rested my head in my hand, desperately trying to make sense of everything here. The floor creaked from further in the house. My head jerked up to meet the noise. My eyes were met with a darkened figure standing in the hallway where I had come from. The low light of the house made it difficult to see anything of note.
God, Ryan, what the fuck, man? What the hell is going on here?
I stood up from the table. Ryan didn't move.
Are you okay?
Did you take something? I asked. He took a step forward. The glow of the television gave me brief, dim glances at him. I saw blood. I took a few slow steps back to turn on a light. I really wish I hadn't done that. It was immediately clear that Ryan was gone. I was met with a face covered with pale, writhing worms. Where his skin was visible, it was sickly and loose. The worms swallowed up every other feature of his face. My eyes drifted down from his face to the rest of him. His hands, feet, more of the same. His worm-riddled foot took another slow step forward, dragging through a half-dried pool of blood. My hand instinctively found itself around the cold grip of my shotgun. In a rapid change of pace, Ryan's clumsy shuffle towards me turned into an all-out sprint. My heart pounded in my chest and time seemed to slow. I swung the heavy weapon up into my hands. With fear and without hesitation, I squeezed the trigger. I felt a click. Then the deafening gunshot that would leave my ears ringing. The weapon kicked itself back in my hands and let out a wafting cloud of smoke. The shot caught him in the right shoulder. Maggots and blood burst out from the impact. but he was still running towards me. I pumped another shell into the chamber and let off another shot. The thing that was once Ryan dropped to the ground with a hole in its chest and a missing shoulder. I kept the gun pointed at the thing and pumped another shell. My eyes stared in shock when I examined the body. Through the wounds, I saw that the thing was nothing but maggots wrapped around a skeleton. There were minimal amounts of muscle or tissue remaining, only the writhing worms plump and engorged from a feast of flesh. It became clear the shots were only going to slow it down. The swarm was already trying to reconstruct from the trauma caused by the buckshot. The gunshot holes were getting smaller and smaller by the second, the empty spaces in the body being replaced by the shifting worms. I loaded the body with three more shells. I had to think quickly to stop this thing. Moments later, I found myself in the kitchen with my gun in one hand and the book in the other. Dirty pots and pans clattered to the floor when I swept them off the stove. Underneath the caked-on grime and grease was an old gas range. I quickly turned all the burners in the oven on high. Gas would quickly fill the cabin and my time was limited. I stumbled back through the dining room and into the living area, desperately trying to avoid looking at the man-shaped swarm of maggots. Found a tarnished Zippo sitting next to the overflowing ashtray. The lighter produced a sizable enough flame. I balanced the lighter on the dining table and had to make my exit. Once again, my boots found themselves on the creaking wood of the patio. The sky was already darkening with the gloom of twilight. I climbed behind the wheel of my truck and threw the book and firearm into the passenger seat. It whipped around and the cabin was at my back. My foot was heavy on the pedal. The tire spun on the gravel for a brief moment before gaining traction and speeding down the drive. I was counting the seconds in between panic breaths. I was halfway down the drive. 1 second, the evening was calm. Then the sky lit up, and I was deafened once more. The rearview mirror glowed with a fireball, the likes of which I've never seen. I gripped the wheel with white knuckles and let out an almost tearful gasp. The edges of my vision darkened and began closing in. I saw nothing but my headlights on the drive. My hearing faded in to hear the rapid honking of a horn. I blinked away the tunnel vision and quickly hit the brakes. I was met with the headlights of two cars on the other side of the cattle gate. I parked the car and went to reach for my gun. Then I heard the click of a safety being flipped. I turned to see a pistol aimed at me and a weary-eyed man wearing a cheap suit and a loosened tie behind it. "Hello, Sheriff." "Who are you?" I managed to get out.
"My name is Agent Krause. My colleagues and I would like a word."
First Day by the Notorious Tortellini. Debriefing transcript. Operation Salmon Flight. Location: New York. Date: April 6th, 2012. Interviewer: Agent Sherwin. Transcript begins at 13:36. Morning, Ralph. How's it going?
I'm hanging in there.
How's the family? Your mother feeling any better?
She's getting there, you know her. She's a fighter.
She cooking Easter dinner this year? What she got planned?
Lasagna this year. She's already working on the sauce, you know?
Yeah, God bless her. Anyway, you know why we're here. Your last stop. You lost both your teammates.
Yeah, Romeo and Rich. Well, you saw the report.
I did. Let's start from the beginning.
All right. So we were sent by Agent to Massachusetts to deal with a single target of a suspected KMOG situation. Subject was male, mid-50s.
Go on.
So, got to the place, the address given. Romeo knocked, and a young lady answered the door. Called herself Lydia.
Were you expecting another person there?
No. Briefin didn't mention anyone else. She said she was the only person there. She didn't look so well.
How so?
I'm not sure. She just seemed out of it, you know, dazed, tired, maybe like she hadn't slept in weeks.
Continue.
Rich, he nudged me. He said he heard something upstairs. Girl was being cagey and wouldn't let us in, so Rich went to do his thing around back.
His thing?
Yeah, Agent Rich was some kind of special forces, Green Beret, I think. If he didn't want you to hear him coming, then you just wouldn't. End of story.
So Rich attempted to enter around the back of the house. Then what?
Well, we're keeping the girl downstairs when bam, 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 I heard a mag dump upstairs. Me and Romeo, we just looked at each other. We knew what the deal would be. I stayed with the girl. Romeo ran upstairs. I hear Romeo yell for a second, and I yell back, and he shouts the all clear.
So what about the girl?
Well, that's the thing. When I turned back around to escort her with me, bitch stabbed me.
She stabbed you? Where?
Yeah, left shoulder. Here, look. Take a look.
That doesn't look too bad.
Yeah, it caught the strap on my shoulder rig, thank God. I was able to draw to my hip and put 3 in her chest.
Was she?
Yeah, that killed her. The guys came running down a second later. Romeo checked me out while Rich checked the girl.
Hey, Ralph, hold on one sec. Ralph, we're going to be here a while. I'm ordering lunch. Can I get you a burger?
Oh, yeah. Be great. I appreciate it.
Yeah, order 2 burgers, deluxe, and whatever you guys want. Yeah, send to get it. All right. Go on.
So, 3 of us started clearing the rest of the house, you know. The place is pretty big. Go back upstairs to where Rich met the target. It was a study, what we expected. You know, found some books that were on record to be collected if found, and we loaded those up. Bagged the bodies and started back to the green box.
Why did you head there?
Romeo suggested it. Said we needed to get some supplies and we could drop the bodies and materials off there first before calling it in and cleaning up the scene.
Okay.
Got there, you know, after drove through the back roads in the woods and a little shack with a trap door under it. Moved the stuff and Romeo, he pulled his gun.
On who?
On Rich. Pointed right at his back. He said, "Hands up. Keep your eyes down, you motherfucker." I said to him, "What the fuck are you doing?" And he said, "Rich was a goddamn Green Beret. He would have never needed to empty a 15-round magazine into some old fuck. You saw the body. Died where he stood. Plus, if that was really Rich, his gun would be on me by now. You know he doesn't take our shit."
And? Here, go on.
All right, thank you. So, anyway, Rich turned. Romeo shot him 3 times, and he hit the ground.
And he?
Yeah, in the heart.
How's the burger?
Oh, it's a good burger.
So, you and Romeo?
Yeah, we bagged up Rich, put everything in the box, and then...
Then?
Romeo was facing away from me, muttering, and I saw...
You saw?
He was speaking in some kind of tongue. He was trying to make eye contact with me through the mirror.
And?
I dropped the book. I guess that broke his concentration and he lunged at me. I put 3 in him, too.
Damn.
At that point, I called it in. I didn't know what to do.
You hungry, Ralph? Feeling all right?
Yeah, I,
What the fuck, Sherwin? Stand back. Close your fucking eyes. What day is it, Ralph? What day is it?
I don't know.
Sherwin, fucking why? I've known Ralph for 5 years. He was a devout Catholic.
What the fuck does that...
What day is today? It's Good Friday.
Guns or Books? Delta Green vs. Call of Cthulhu by Craig Lawson. Shouldn't we go back to the library? Professor McIntyre asked, wringing his hands nervously. Do some more research? Agent Curtis sneered in disgust at the dusty academic, in his tweed jacket with elbow patches, horn-rimmed glasses, and arms full of musty old books. He released the safety on the assault rifle in his hand, stroking the deadly serpentine weapon with affection. That's not the way we do things in DG, he replied. Then he kicked the warehouse door open and stormed inside. The professor watched the crew-cut, bulging muscles, American flag tank top-wearing ex-marine rush into the unknown danger inside. This is what's wrong with our country, he muttered. No one stops to think before they go off half-cocked. The adrenaline was coursing through Curtis's veins. He felt invincible. His M4 was raised, his finger resting on the trigger guard, ready to open fire, delighting in the screams of the startled illegal immigrants packing bricks of heroin. As guards with Uzis charged out of the shadows, he flicked the gun to full auto and mowed them down, each burst lethal. Grinning from ear to ear, he barely registered the violence he committed. His thoughts were already on what would happen next. Kill Vasilevsky. Send a report to his handler about what unnatural horror they had found. Go home, pound a beer, then his wife. It was shaping up to be a great day. Following in the bloody wake, Professor McIntyre tried to avoid looking at the grisly remains, his nerves already shot from their encounter earlier at the curio shop. They'd gone in search of answers to questions that had chilled him to the bones, and they'd left with a blasphemous tome bound in human skin, the interior pages crawling with spidery sigils that made his eyes water to look at. While there, there'd been the inhuman appearance of the shopkeeper, hysterical shouting, words spoken that resonated with sanity-blasting arcane power, and lots of gunfire. They'd also found the address to Vasilevsky's warehouse. Ejecting the spent magazine, Curtis slammed another one into place. Come on, Professor. They'll be expecting us now. He drew a heavy-looking revolver from where it had been shoved behind his belt at the small of his back. You want this? It was McIntyre's turn to sneer. I'm not some cowboy. I wouldn't even know how to hold that thing. My place is in a library, doing research. Besides, if Vasilevsky is behind all this, I doubt your bullets will have much effect. I guess we'll see, Curtis said, tucking the handgun back out of sight. The warehouse wasn't large, and Curtis's M4 made short work of the goons who got in their way. Passing bleeding, bullet-ridden corpses, McIntyre spotted the edges of tattoos on the back of their thick Russian necks. He stopped to pull a shirt up, revealing a huge tattoo covering the man's entire back, a Celtic knot of writhing, eel-like worms. I thought these worm fanatics were only Mexicans and Asians, Curtis remarked, shivering at the thought of those slimy, many-toothed things slithering over his skin. Professor dropped the blood-soaked shirt. I guess they're expanding. Not if I can help it, they aren't. They found a locked hatch, which the former Marine smashed open with a fire extinguisher, to expose a long metal stairway leading into the dark earth. A rush of hot air blew up from wherever the stairs led. It smelled of slime, stagnant water, and death. After you, McIntyre said, gesturing to the foreboding black hole. Clicking a high-powered flashlight to the barrel of his rifle, Curtis led the way. Professor McIntyre followed closely behind, his hands softly stroking the binding on the grimoire. They each had their weapon of choice. The stairs ended in a natural cavern, dripping with foul moisture. There was a broken sewer pipe at the near end of the cave, spewing foul sludge into a trough running the length of the chamber, where it exited into another broken sewer pipe. In between, the trickle was dammed, creating a dark pool of oily liquid that roiled and bubbled with squirming, fat, ropey worms. Occasionally, the writhing mass lifted the chewed, waxy ends of arms or legs above the surface, before other worms latched onto them with their lamprey-like mouths and pulled them back into the slimy pool. Proudly overseeing this macabre feast, grinning an insane death's head smile, was Igor Vasilevsky. He was thin, skeletal, his bruised purple robes hanging off his frame, and flanked by two bodyguards, each with an AK-47 pointed at the two men. "Welcome, my friends," he said in his thick Russian accent. "You should drop your weapons." Agent Curtis chuckled. "Yeah, I don't think so. What I think is that your guys should drop theirs." "I'm afraid that is not possible." "It looks like we have ourselves a good old Mexican standoff," Curtis said, looking for any advantage. Behind him, Professor McIntyre flicked the heavy book open and ran his finger down the twisting characters. He could feel the allure of the power offered in those alien words whispering seductively in his subconscious. Vasilevsky's spidery hand shot forward and violently pushed one of the bodyguards, whose eyes opened with terror as he lost his balance, flailing his arms wildly before splashing into the worm-filled sewage. His screams were obliterated by the inhuman screeching of the worms as they surged over his body. "Feed, my babies," the insane Russian shouted. "Rise up and feed!" Curtis pulled the trigger. The clatter of automatic fire echoed loudly and was enhanced as the other bodyguard returned fire. Bullets ricocheted and whined through the confined space, tearing into the thick worms, spraying black blood and chunks of rubbery flesh. Vasilevsky was chanting wildly, encouraging his unholy brood, which burst from the trough to flow sickeningly towards the stairs. "I could use some help here, Professor," Curtis shouted as he blasted away at the living carpet. They undulated and squirmed. They shrieked, and they gnashed their hundreds of teeth in their sucker-like mouths. Agent Curtis fired until the M4 clicked empty, before switching magazines and continuing firing. But for every worm that he blasted to oblivion, a dozen more surged from the trough to take its place. "I call on the power of the living flame," Professor McIntyre intoned, sweat glistening on his brow. "I call on the destructive might of the Burning One. I summon you by your names, Huihuatl and Cthugra. I bind you by your true name, Cthugla." Fire, living, writhing fire, so hot that it melted the stone, erupted in the center of the room, scorching everything that it touched. The sewage evaporated. The worms burst as their bodies were superheated from the inside. The Russian groon screamed as the fire ate him, blackening, cracking, boiling him alive. Vasilevsky fled the onslaught of the outer god, squirming like a worm into the broken sewer pipe. "You did it, Professor," Agent Curtis started forward, but was blocked by a pillar of flames. "Professor, make the fire go away. We need to go after Vasilevsky." But Professor McIntyre was no longer listening. The magic power he had released had shattered his grip on reality. Blood ran from his eyes and nose. The skin-bound book lay discarded on the cave floor, dropped by nerveless fingers. "God damn it, Professor!" Curtis could feel the heat of the fire as it swirled toward him. He'd raised the assault rifle and shot the professor between the eyes, hoping the death of the man who'd summoned the living flames would extinguish them. McIntyre flopped to the ground, blood and brains splattering the wall behind the corpse. The column of fire did not disappear. Agent Curtis ran, dropping the M4 when it impeded his ability to climb the stairs fast enough. The fire raged below him, engulfing the dead professor, twisting the metal staircase, heating it up so the soles of Curtis's combat boots smoked. Like a malevolent backdraft, the fire was pulling itself up the long shaft. He slammed the broken doors over the latch, knowing they would only slow the fire for a moment. He pulled a burner phone from his back pocket and typed a quick text to his handler. They would need to know he and McIntyre had failed to stop Vasilevsky, and that they'd release an unstoppable cosmic fire as well. As the metal doors started to glow red, the heat radiated through in angry waves. Curtis drew his Beretta M9A1, the handgun he'd offered the professor earlier. He checked the breech, pulled the clip and reinserted it, then leveled it at the doors as they began melting, dripping molten steel into the cavern below. Remembering the soul-chilling screams of the blackened corpse of Vasilevsky's bodyguard, Curtis turned the pistol to his temple and pulled the trigger. As it turned out, neither guns nor books were enough to stop the unnatural forces from beyond.
Agent Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day by Craig Lawson.
I woke up with something moving in my mouth. There was a hum in the room that made everything feel fuzzy. It made my bones ache, and my heart palpitated wildly. I struggled not to vomit, worried I'd choke, with my mouth blocked the way it was. My eyes didn't seem to be working either. I opened them, but rather than the cheap motel room I expected, there was this vast emptiness of a dark warehouse, with blurry gray shapes hovering around me. I blinked, trying to make sense of what I was seeing. Horrible shapes with pincers and antennae, with shining medical implements clenched in multiple limbs. I closed my eyes again. The last things I could remember were the funny smell in the Del Fuego motel, railing Maria from behind, the phone call from Natalie, her voice full of heartbreak and tears, saying she was leaving me and taking the kids. I had begged her not to go, but she hung up. I put my fist through the drywall. Maria was furious to discover I was married. We'd argued. She'd left too. And there was a bottle of bourbon and nothing else. No, that wasn't true. I could vaguely remember the encrypted text at 3:30 in the morning. Bourbon nearly gone. Alexander, you've been invited to a night at the opera, the text said. The show starts at 5. Your plus one will meet you there. Black tie is required. Then an address. Stupid. Angry. Drunk. I'd taken an Uber, my 9mm tucking into my jeans. I'd stumbled out of the car into an eerily quiet industrial park, leaving some cash on the seat. I didn't wait for the rest of the team. I didn't reconnoiter the area. I didn't approach the target cautiously. I charged in, gun in hand, ready to deal with whatever horror show I'd been summoned to deal with. There were protocols for a reason, and I'd ignored them all. There was a series of buzzing whines that reminded me of a circular saw cutting through plywood, but they rose and fell, pausing and starting in a way that vaguely suggested speech. I felt the thing in my mouth push deeper. I gagged against it, tasting metal and bile. Something cold, metallic, it felt like a medical probe, touched my forehead. Then there was pain. White-hot pain stood my hair on end, caused every muscle in my body to clench. My eyes bulged from my skull, but I couldn't see anything except the pain. Red spots exploding across my field of vision. I'd been briefly tortured by the Taliban during my second tour, but that was tickles and giggles compared to this. Then it was gone. Everything was gone.
Alexander! Alexander! You here?
I heard the words shouted from another life. Agent Andrea? Echoing across the empty warehouse. But my brain couldn't understand what they meant. The circular saw voices answered. Then there was screaming, gunshots, an explosion, either a flashbang or a grenade. The sounds were alien, and while I could name them, none of the names had any context. It was like my memory was a whiteboard that had been wiped clean, leaving the faint shadows of words on a field of glossy white. My eyes rolled loose in their sockets, rolled across a darkness interrupted by a stutter of orange muzzle flashes. Nat, a voice mumbled near me. Maybe it was my own. Natalie, baby, I'm sorry.
Alexander!
There was another voice, maybe the same one as before. Maybe Andrew, somewhere beside me. I tried to turn my head, but had forgotten how.
We've got to get out of here, man. Those bug creatures are cutting us apart.
I felt rough hands gripping my arms. Then they jerked away.
Jesus Christ! What the hell did they do to you?
The words were gagged out with difficulty, horrified and disgusting at the same time.
I can't remember,
I said. Whatever was in my mouth made it hard to talk and my words sound slurred.
Take this thing out of my mouth.
Your mouth?
There's nothing in your mouth. It's your skull, man. The top is gone. I can see your goddamn brain.
One of my eyes focused on his face. He was terrified.
his eyes darting everywhere, his tongue nervously licking his lips.
I don't hear Andrea anymore. She must be...
He started to say, before a buzzsaw noise cut him off, and a clawed pincer burst through his chest, showering me with hot, sticky blood that tasted slightly of iron and salt. The limp body was flung aside by the same shadowy monstrosity I tried not to see earlier. I wanted to scream as it stamped closer, smelling faintly of wet dog, and reached into my skull with a feeler. Images flashed faster than lightning. Natalie smiling under a wedding veil. The kids playing in the backyard. Maria writhing and moaning. Andrew and Andrea clinking beers after a successful op. An M16 bucking under the bright Afghani sun. My life flashing before my eyes. Then everything went black.
The Sacrifice by Craig Lawson. The witch had drawn a number of unrecognizable symbols on A.J. McHale's naked body, using something that ran down the sides of his torso and legs. From a distance, it was black against his pale skin and steamed in the cool autumn air. The rest of the coven chanted words in an unintelligible language, dancing and leaping wildly around the roaring bonfire that cast flickering shadows on the tree-bordered clearing and painted their insane faces with hellish oranges and reds. They were as naked as McHale, their bodies lithe, haggard, voluptuous, or sagging, were daubed with mud and grime in symbols similar to those of McHale's, symbols of insanity and power. Through their night vision goggles, the four agents of H-Cell watched the unholy scene play out. In their ghillie suits with grease paint darkening their faces and netting over their matte black combat assault rifles, they were invisible, ghosts among the trees. They moved slowly, shifting from shadow to shadow, their voice transmitted from throat receivers to earpieces, moth wing whispers in the night.
Hassan, Hugo, take the right flank, Agent Hendricks hissed silently.
Roger that, LT.
Agent Hottie, you're with me on the left. We'll catch them in the crossfire.
Sir?
Hottie.
What about Agent McHale?
You know our orders.
Their instructions had been clear. Stop the ritual at all costs, kill the witches, leave no witnesses, and if possible, save McHale. In that order.
Aye, sir.
Good. Then do your duty.
They lapsed into silence as they neared the clearing. The chanting had reached a fever pitch. The fire flared higher and brighter as the witches threw armfuls of wood into its hungry maw. Through the shimmering heat waves, McHale struggled against the ropes that held him to the blood-stained stone altar. His eyes were wild with terror. Blood trickled from the corner of his mouth, from begging, pleading, screaming against the gag that was shoved deep between his teeth. The leader of the coven raised a bone-handled knife with the blade of a black meteoric rock high above the bound agent's chest.
Dark man, she shouted to the stars. Come to me, my lover, I call with blood.
Before she could bring the knife down, bullets ripped across the clearing like angry hornets. The loud report of automatic gunfire following closely behind like the buzz of giant wings. The bullets tore into the women, cutting through their fragile bodies in gout of blood and viscera, spraying hot blood across the trampled grass and swirling leaves. They screamed as the bullets continued to slash across the clearing, jerking them back with their force, like a marionette pulled by invisible wires. In seconds, it was over. The witches lay scattered here and there, twisted and broken, blood pooling around them, steam rising off their corpses. None had made it more than a few steps before they had been cut down. Some had run, trying to escape the merciless hail of bullets. Others had charged into the teeth of them, trying to protect their mistress. All of them had died. The echo of the guns was deafening in its absence, and stretched out while H-Cell waited, their fingers poised on the triggers in case any of the witches were only playing dead. When it was clear that none of them were getting back up, the four agents shuffled forward into the clearing, looking like shaggy bears in their ghillie suits. Hattie tried to avoid looking at the blood and bodies. It's hard to believe I'm a tax accountant in my day job, she muttered.
Keep operational silence, Agent Hendricks ordered. Check them. Make sure they're dead. Agent Hadi, stick with me.
Agent Hassan and Hugo went about the grisly task of checking the bodies, rolling them over, checking for vital signs. A whimper of pain, a pistol shot. Silence. The High Priestess of the Coven had fallen across Agent Mikhail, who still writhed, desperately pleading with his eyes for them to free him. Hendricks shoved her off. She flopped to the ground like a marionette with cut strings, loose limbs disconnected, head lolling. The stone knife fell from her nerveless fingers, clattering against a stone slab on its way to the ground. Agent Hendricks stooped to retrieve it. Acel will want it brought back to them for safekeeping. As his fingers brushed the handle, the knife vibrated, jittered, and shot off the ground into the waiting hand of a black man. Where he had come from, they don't know, but he glowed with darkness, sucking in the firelight into his mirror-smooth black flesh like a black hole devouring the light.
I've heard the call, and I have come.
He said, though, his words weren't in a language spoken by men. They all heard and understood, and they screamed. Agent Hadi broke and ran, tears running down her grease-smeared face, urine running down her legs. Agent Hugo raised his scar and squeezed the trigger, spraying bullets that ripped into Agent Hassan, ricocheted off the stone altar, and struck the dark man, where large rounds flattened and fell, like beetles, to the grass. The dark man turned his gaze at Hugo, and the agent turned the rifle on himself. Agent Hendricks thought of his children, Alex and Sophie, snug in bed, safe at home, and knew they would never truly be safe. Not while creatures like this existed. He pulled out a grenade from his webbing, yanked out the pin, and ran at the inhuman thing wearing a human guise. The meteor-bladed knife buried itself in his stomach. The empty, soulless eyes of the dark man stared into Hendrix's eyes, burning his mind away like blowing out a candle. The explosion showered chunks of the agent across the clearing, some landing with a hiss in the fire, others landing with a wet plop. When the smoke cleared, the dark man was gone. Tied to the ancient stone altar, Agent Mikhail whimpered, forgotten and alone, surrounded by the dead, while the bonfire burned on.
Thank you for listening to Psychotic Operas, presented by Black Project Gaming, Mayday Roleplay, The Green Box, and the Night at the Opera community. Join us again next time as we present even more stories inspired by the Delta Green role-playing game. If you like what you heard, consider joining the Night at the Opera subreddit at r/Night at the Opera. For more Delta Green content, check out Black Project Gaming, Mayday Roleplay, and the Green Box podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Until then, we'll be seeing you.